Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
Yeah.
And NPR.
Tired of the everyday routine?
Ooh.
Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure?
Yeah.
Want to get away from it all?
Yeah.
We offer you escape.
What is this?
Shh, just wait.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Okay, so this is an old-time radio show from the 1940s, late 40s.
I figured that.
It's called Escape.
Uh-huh.
And it always starts the same way, you know, with...
We offer you escape!
That phrase. I love how they say it. And here's what's great about this show and why it seems like a good way to start this show, our show, is that immediately after they say that phrase...
Yes.
They then present you with a scenario from which there seems to be no escape.
You are hanging by your fingertips on the sheer face of an ice cliff.
Like, here's one.
Suspended 1,000 feet above instant death, with your strength running out, and with no chance for escape.
There's a million of these.
You were aboard a Chinese junk run aground off the coast of Borneo.
You were lost in a London fog.
You were a passenger aboard a submarine.
You were the subject of an experiment.
Nazi agent.
Nameless terror.
Gigantic department store.
No escape.
Wait, one more just for kicks.
You are trapped in a remote valley of the Andes, walled in by sheer rock precipices, and surrounding you, closing in on you, is a band of blind men who want your eyes.
How could you not listen to that? What is better than like a story where the walls are closing in on you and you don't know what you're going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then suddenly,
escape!
It's like the best story ever.
That's true.
So, you ready?
Okay.
This hour,
we offer you
3 bizarre scenarios.
True stories
of people
and planets
trying,
yearning
to
escape.
Will they make it?
And if they do, what are they escaping to?
Okay, enough of that. I'm Jad.
I'm Robert.
This is Radiolab. And to start, let's talk about escape artists.
Because why not, right? I mean, this is an escape show.
Exactly.
The most famous escape artist in history is probably Harry Houdini.
And our first story is kind of a Houdini story. It comes from our producer, Pat.
Yes.
It's about a guy whose nickname is...
Little Houdini, right?
Yeah.
I heard this story from my friend Ben.
Hello.
Like months ago.
How are you, brother?
Ben, your journalism friend.
My journalism friend, yeah.
I'm a reporter with the Tampa Bay Times.
In Florida. But our story begins... at the Turney Center Penitentiary.
In only Tennessee.
That's where we caught up with Little Houdini. He was between escapes, you could say. A couple of guards walked us into this huge cafeteria.
No, this will be fine.
Sat us down at this little tiny table and brought out Chris.
Chris Gay.
That's his name?
Yeah.
Did y'all have a... Did you interview my brother and everything?
Yeah, we talked.
Everything come okay?
Tari.
Yeah.
And, I guess the first thing I noticed was he was even smaller than I expected him to be. So he's going to be little.
You know, nickname.
But
he was a very little Houdini.
A short little guy.
Maybe 5'5".
Yeah, 140, 130. Like his prison uniform was pretty baggy on him. He's wearing a white ball cap. And he's got a big smile stretched across his face.
Escaping. I think it's actually addicted, I think.
Addictive?
Yeah, I think it is. But I think what's addictive about it, it's a way to... it's a way... to punch him in the stomach and say, hey, this can be done. I can do this. I may not have been, y'all might have told me I can't do nothing all my life. More people have told me that, but I know I can do it.
How many times have you escaped?
Probably about 13.
13?
13?
13.
Out of jail.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate to all 13, I made all 13.
I did a little research to see how that compares to other Houdinis, and there are a few people who come close. As far as I was able to find out, nobody alive has that many escapes.
Could we say pretty safely that he's the greatest jailbreaker alive?
I'll go ahead and call him that, yeah.
So I got away from him and...
Pretty much without even asking, Chris began to list his escapes.
Well,
he has escaped every way you can imagine.
Slipped my handcuff off and went through the air ducts. Went out the back in between the razor wire. Jumped the fence, pulled all my clothes off, set my boxer shorts.
Like handcuffs. He said picking a handcuff key is one of the easiest things he's ever done.
Sure enough.
He's used everything from a pin spring to a safety pin. Even once...
A zipper thing. Made a handcuff key out of my zipper.
He scrambled out windows, ran outdoors, climbed over walls...
Snuck under walls.
Drilled through them.
He staged suicide.
Twice.
He's tricked the cops by drawing up fake escape plans. Fooled their dogs by...
Covering his clothes in pepper.
Bunch of pepper.
Another time, he didn't have any pepper, but...
He had found some roadkill.
It stunk. It didn't smell like a skunk.
And he rubs it all over his body to erase his scent.
Pretty good at hiding, too.
He's hidden in trees, jumped down a trapdoor that he cut in the floor of his trailer.
Once he hid in a grave.
It was a shallow grave.
Beside a dead body.
Another time, he...
Ended up on a college campus someplace outside Atlanta.
And he hid out on top of an air duct for 2 days. Until the coast is clear.
But one of the interesting things about Chris is that even though he's been doing this for 20 years...
There's never a record of him assaulting anyone.
No. I refuse to do it.
Stole things, but pretty much only things to help him run.
I always refuse to go in somebody's house. I always refuse to go in somebody's garage.
He says he's got rules for himself about how he breaks the law.
Almost like a code. In fact, the story that got Ben interested in Chris in the first place... is kind of the perfect example of this.
This was a few years ago, in 2007.
Ben got a press release.
From the Florida Highway Patrol, be on the lookout for, you know, Chris Gay.
And according to the press release, here's what happened. Chris had been locked up in Alabama when he got a telephone call from his family.
Said that my mom was dying.
She had cancer. So he faked suicide, busted out of the prison transport van that was bringing him to the hospital, stole a truck, and just started driving home.
He was going to see his mom. To pay his last respects.
They didn't expect her to live very long.
As he comes around the bend in the road to where his mom lives, he's driving a Walmart tractor trailer, and he's got like a dozen cops on his tail.
When I get down there, I run off the road.
Crashes a truck into a field near his mom's trailer.
Jumps out of the truck.
Just as I was running toward the house, they jumped out of the cars and running toward me.
And just before he makes it inside, they chase him into the woods.
And he disappears. Without seeing his mom, who would end up dying before he could see her. A few days later, Chris turns up in Daytona Beach.
Driving a tour bus that belonged to Crystal Gayle.
The country singer?
Yeah.
He stole Crystal Gayle's tour bus?
In Tennessee.
And then drove it to Florida.
Yeah.
So you get this press release and you think what?
I thought, how do you miss with a story like this?
So Ben writes his story for the newspaper.
Big news.
And pretty soon?
Tonight, a luxury tour bus that normally carries...
TV news people are on it.
It took off.
Now he's an escape artist and something of a folk hero.
And soon Chris became something of a folk song. Literally.
The week Chris got caught, a Grammy award-winning bluegrass picker named Tim O'Brien put out a song called... The Ballad of Christopher Daniel Gay.
Of Christopher Daniel Gay.
Pretty soon a famous Hollywood director.
Bought the rights to the movie.
They were originally trying to get Johnny Depp to do it, but they fit in the...
just as big as his head.
It's perfect.
You know, here's the underdog making a run for it for what seemed at that time to be really good intentions. And part of me thought, you know, I mean, this is awesome, but it's also...
I mean, there's got to be
more
to this story.
Absolutely. Who's this guy, really? And
why does he keep running?
Approaching destination on the left.
You want to tell us where we're going?
Going to Buckeye Bottom Road to talk to Atari Gay.
Atari is Chris's older brother.
Who says he can tell us the whole story about how they grew up. Here we are.
Chris grew up in a small trailer out in the middle of nowhere, west of Nashville.
There are some junk cars off in the woods.
We find Tari hanging out with a couple buddies, drinking some beers.
Y'all have any certain things you want to know about or anything? Or?
And we start talking about what it was like when they were kids.
You know, we lived in a little bitty trailer down there.
He points off into the woods across the street.
On this land.
It was Chris and Tari. They had a little brother named Eddie who went by Cotton. And then there was Leanne.
Leanne Gay.
The eldest.
I'm his older sister.
Cotton's in jail, so we weren't able to interview him, but Leanne and Tari both told us that growing up in that trailer was hard.
We grew up like mountain people, you know.
No electricity, no running water, did their wash in the river. Wasn't always much food around.
There used to be a big field of plums, a big plum thicket. We'd go down there and we'd eat.
But you can't live on plums. And
a lot of days we would be hungry.
Leanne remembers lying in bed one night and she couldn't go to sleep because her hunger pangs were so bad. And Tari said, here, this will help you. And he ripped up
a little thing of notebook paper.
Gave it to Leanne. He said, just chew it up real good and swallow it and it'll help you.
And for Chris and his little brother, Cotton, those were the good days. Because
when my daddy and her separated,
Mom and Dad got a divorce and the family split apart.
Tari and Leanne went to live with Mom. Chris and his little brother, Eddie,
who were 10 and 11 at that point, moved in with their dad.
Yeah.
And their dad.
He really wasn't, you know, I don't guess.
He just wasn't no provider.
He wasn't around very much.
Uh-uh.
I mean, he was a deadbeat dad.
Yeah.
He got where he would get off work on Fridays and he wouldn't come home for weeks at a time.
He'd tell them to go, if they was hungry, to go steal from churches.
Sometimes they'd hike through the woods to their grandfather's house, their mom's dad, who Chris says hated him and his little brother Cotton.
We would go down there and he got where he started making us fight each other. And if we fist fought each other and the winner got something to eat. That's you know, he was mean.
So that was their life, beating each other up for food.
He had dogs. He'd sick his dogs on us.
So one night, one of them went and found their dad's rifle, an old .22.
And a tube sock full of rusty bullets, and went out behind the barn, lit a tire fire, and made a suicide pact. Cotton was going to shoot Chris in the forehead and then shoot himself. And Chris closed his eyes and Cotton put the gun to Chris's forehead. Chris heard him whimper and he opened his eyes and Cotton said, I can't do it. And Chris said, well, let me do it. He took the gun and he put the barrel to his brother's head and he couldn't pull the trigger either.
And they were 10 and 11 at this point?
10 and 11.
Man.
And Ben says, if you take a step back, you can see that it's right about here at this point that Chris and his brother start to steal, like really steal.
They started out, like I said, on bicycles, and then they went to, I guess, four-wheelers and motorcycles.
It's all stuff with wheels.
Yeah.
Chris remembers going with Cotton to sit on a bluff.
That was on Interstate 40. We would go watch the trucks go by.
And they would dream about getting in a semi and driving far away.
And then they went to, I guess, four-wheelers and motorcycles and then cars, and it gradually got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Until one day when Chris was 17.
He stole a semi.
Didn't even really know how to drive it.
But I climbed up inside it. The keys was in it. So I started it up.
And from there was really no looking back.
Can I pause you right there before you continue? Let me just name some modes of transportation, and you tell me yes or no what you've stolen.
Yep.
A semi.
Yep.
Bulldozer.
Yes.
Skid steer.
Skid steer.
Tractor.
Backhoe.
Anything that flies?
I actually got in a helicopter once, and we got in there, started flipping switches, and we got the blades where it rotate, but it was at a low, low thing. And we got scared and got out of it.
Point is,
this is his life for more than two decades.
Stealing things that move, getting caught, and escaping. Stealing things that move, getting caught, and escaping. Until eventually, he became that guy on TV.
A little Houdini who has police on the run in six states.
But then one night, something happened that seemed like it might break this loop forever.
He met a girl.
Yes, yes.
Her name was Missy.
She was waiting tables at a little campsite diner. He thought she was cute.
And Missy?
He's a smooth talker, I'll give him that.
Yeah. She liked the way he talked.
Yeah, I was taken right off the bat. And
a few months later,
I got pregnant with my daughter, and me and him
moved in together, and for a while, life was really good.
We had a little money in the bank, and I was working good for Gregor Construction, had a good paying job, running a bulldozer, and I was actually going to school in Lebanon to get my CDL license.
We had a nice trailer, and it had a refrigerator.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I really like it.
As a matter of fact, I was talking to my daughter last night.
Became real close with my daughter.
She remembers it like it was yesterday. He got her a dog. She named him Blackjack, first puppy she ever got.
That right there was the...
It was the best moments and days of...
The happiest days of, I think...
Mine and his life.
Ever, right there.
But then, things got complicated. And one day, when Chris and Missy were driving in the car together...
We were going right through in the middle of Nashville, and...
Chris says, look, I gotta tell you something. I stole something.
I stole a Bobcat tractor.
From a construction job.
I sold it.
To make ends meet.
As soon as she heard that, Missy whipped her head around.
And, I like hit him with a Big Mac right in the middle of Nashville on I-24.
A Big Mac.
Yes, I did.
But it was only funny for a little while. A
couple days later...
Somebody told on me.
He got arrested.
And he stayed in jail for about 2 years. And
then escaped. I don't know how exactly.
But before long, he stole again.
And ended up back in jail again.
And,
And Missy?
I stayed by his side.
Again.
She was determined. He'd come home from these escapes saying...
I just hated being locked up.
Hated being away from you guys.
I didn't want to be away from my kids, and I didn't want to be away from Missy.
Each time he got locked up, Missy would write him letters.
I would send him money because I worked the whole time I was pregnant with my 13-year-old.
What kind of work were you doing?
Worked on a sanding line. Sanded rocking chairs.
And Chris, meanwhile, was thinking about his next escape.
And when he came charging through the front door,
thinking of roadkill,
telling Missy that again he had escaped,
I stayed with him.
Again. But this time,
I started asking for check stubs on a weekly basis and adding hours up that he'd been gone from the time he left the house, which I would knock down riding time there and from.
You were keeping tabs on it.
Yes, I was.
She even went so far as to take $5,000 out of the bank account that they shared and buy a trailer for them to live in, one that wouldn't move.
You know, I was trying more or less to make him do right.
And it seemed like it was working.
But then one night...
Chris came in after work and sat down in the living room with Missy and their daughter to watch some TV.
Next thing we know, we heard a loud beating at the door. Well, you know, I jump up and he jumps up and... next thing I know, he was, you know, moving that kitchen table and sliding it out. Next thing I know, he raises the rug up off the floor and he jumps down in there and he says, cover it back up. So I covered it back up, put the table back and answered the door. And they came in and they walked all around the house. And they left.
So you bought this house to keep him still and he'd cut a trap door in it.
Yep. He was stayed up under the trailer the whole time. They were walking over top of him.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess it was more or less I was young. I knowed, but I was also in denial.
But eventually something happened that kind of forced her to admit just how bad things had gotten with Chris.
Day before Halloween, Danielle and her daddy had went down to Walmart and she had picked out a little witch outfit. Because she was old enough, and then, you know, she was four. You know, trick-or-treating for a four-year-old, that was a big thing.
The next morning, it's Halloween.
Her daddy looked at her and said, well, baby, I'm going to work. I'll see you this afternoon. You know, I get home, we'll get your outfit on you, and we'll go trick-or-treating up in Nashville. And that afternoon, Danielle was sitting on the back step, and she was just sitting there in a white T-shirt. And I asked her, I said, Danielle, what are you doing? I'm waiting on my daddy to get home, Mama. He said, we're going to go to Nashville, and we're going to go trick-or-treating. I said, okay, he'll be back in a little bit. And she sat there and she sat there. And he never came home that night.
You, I don't really hear, like, I don't hear a lot of bitterness from you.
No.
Is that accurate?
Yes.
Why?
Well, as far as me being upset with Chris or hating Chris?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that what you're asking me?
Yes, ma'am.
How could you not forgive Chris? 18 years. That's how long I've known that boy. And I have seen firsthand where he lived, how he lived. I'm a fighter. I go to church. My kids go to church. I learn to forgive people. And Chris has had a hard life. He needs help. Help that I can't give him.
Yeah. You thought for a while that you could give him that help.
Yes, I did.
I should have been there for my kids.
Yeah.
It'd take a lifetime of making this up.
Yeah.
You know, making up what I've done.
So what do you make of this story, Pat?
Well... Somewhere along the way, for Ben and I, this story really became about the simple question, can a person like Chris, you know, who grew up the way he did, Can a person like that change? Or do you just never escape a childhood like that?
People live with how they grew up.
You ask Miski, she says,
if two kids and a wife that he loves, if we can't stop him, I don't know what can.
But when we asked Chris, he said,
it's in my mind I'm going to change, and I'm not only going to change, I'm working to change.
Really?
Of course, he has said that before.
Truthfully?
What's different this time? What?
You know, I'm doing classes I don't have to take. I'm taking every one of them. I'm taking how to be a better daddy. I'm taking everything. As a matter of fact, when I come up for pro this month, I'm going to ask them, can I go ahead and complete another 9-month program?
Wait, is he saying he's going to ask them to keep him in jail?
Yeah.
After 20 years of running, he's asking the parole board not to let him go.
Which made me think, I don't know, maybe.
And Ben, what do you think?
I don't think there's any way that Chris changes. I think he's, you know, unfortunately doomed to stay in the cycle. Which sucks, you know? I'm sort of ashamed that I have that opinion.
Why? I mean, why do you think you feel that way?
I mean, my dad was pretty similar to Chris in many ways.
Really?
My father abandoned me when I was a young boy. And I got reacquainted with him when I was a teenager. At that point, he was a very sad alcoholic who often made big mistakes. And I played high school football. And near the end of the year, my senior year, they put out this highlight tape. So I took that highlight tape to his trailer in Slick, Oklahoma. And after shooting a lot of tequila, we sat down on the couch together and I put the tape in and we were watching, you know, watching me play football. And not long into it, my dad starts sobbing, just bawling, tears running down his face. And I look over at him and he says, I wish I could have been there. And I wanted nothing more in that moment and today than to ask him, why weren't you? And I think in some way I get that opportunity in this job to ask my dad that question.
Ben says his dad never answered that question. And after that day where they watched that football tape, nothing changed. Ben got older, graduated from college, got married, had kids, and his dad never showed up for any of it. So he says when he's talking to a guy like Chris,
in some ways, I'm sitting across the table from my own father.
Which doesn't give him a lot of hope.
The only ounce of encouragement that I have, honestly, is if we find out that Chris has indeed, when given the chance to get out of jail, said, no, thank you, maybe that gives me an ounce of hope.
And a couple weeks ago, Ben got a letter from Chris. Can you just, can you read it for me?
Yeah. He says, Dear Mr. Montgomery, thank you for your letter. I'm doing well. I went up for parole, and yes, I did ask them to let me go through the program. The final decision was to parole me upon completion of the program. I will complete it on October 4th, 2012.
So he's staying.
Well, I better get this in the mail. Thank you again for writing. I hope to hear from you again. Your friend, Christopher Daniel Gay.
Thanks to our producer, Pat Walters.
And to Ben Montgomery. His story on Christopher Daniel Gay is in the Tampa Bay Times, which you can find online. And we've got a link to it from our website, radiolab.org.
will return to escape in just a moment, but first...
Hi there, this is Ben Montgomery. Radio Lab is supported in part by the National Science Foundation and the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.